are listening to WBFYLP 100.9 FM, Belfast, Maine.
And we are down here in the bomb shelter with the mayor of Belfast. That's Eric Sanders.
Hello. Bombed?
No, we're not bombed. That's just what they call this basement for.
Yeah, bomb shelter.
The bomb shelter. And this is WBFY. We're having a discussion and call in with the mayor. Give us a few minutes to cover some basic ground, and then feel free to call us at 338-2277. What's the story, Mr. Mayor?
Well, we had a council meeting on Tuesday night via Zoom, and it was lengthy, and so we're working on that. But in that discussion was the appetite from the council. Neil Harkness had sent out an email to me a couple of weeks ago asking what can we do as a council now, and what can or will we be doing after all of this, and after is the coronavirus. And so out of that came a couple of ideas, which similarly, Islesboro had taken one approach as far back as last November, setting up a group fund for small businesses. But our council has decided and is coordinating with city manager Aaron Herbig to take about $150,000 and open it up to some small businesses for $500 grants to help them get through April and May, and before these big bazooka SBA loans hit, which, as you and I would already, you know, take time. So our biggest fear was, you know, the downtown businesses have largely been shuttered since March 17th. So, and let's say the government money, loans, SBA, FAME, all that gets approved and hits sometime in May, early June. These things take time. How many small businesses might we lose in what is typically mud season with no tourists? Now, how can we save them? So $500 grants are going to set up a committee, non-council, probably Thomas Kittredge and a few other local citizens, to review quick applications and get some money into help our small businesses. Downtown TIF fund, tax increment fund, is what small businesses, all your downtown businesses, property taxes, go into that downtown TIF. So we normally use that money for city projects such as Cross Street or some of Front Street or this and that, sidewalk improvements. It's kind of that TIF money's money they paid us. Pretty humane idea to turn around and offer some of that back short term as a grant. The other thing is food insecurity, or as I would call it growing up, hungry people.
Yeah.
And in the best of times in the city of Belfast, in the best of times, there's food insecurity by many. So the city is going to be setting up offering $100 food vouchers to families and on a come-see basis, and same thing. So we're going to talk about all that and start advertising it. I think they're calling it, and I saw the name today, it's something about keeping the faith. So the Belfast Keep the Faith Fund or something. So we're gonna do that, and the council's committed to that. And, you know, here we are. This is, what, our third week? And we are in the same holding pattern of self-isolating, which I know for you is no big deal. But I'm very social. So it's Governor Mills and Dr. Shea were going to speak at 2:30 today. They delayed that to 2:45. Who the hell knows what's going on the state and on the local level with cases? But it seems like the president and the rest of the country, even with this coming maybe a little quicker or earlier to larger cities outside of Maine, they're looking to get the economy somewhat back opened. I think we're in hunker down mode through April and May myself.
Yeah, I heard an estimate from on the public radio earlier today of Fourth of July is like an optimistic for the country to be starting to get back on its feet.
Well, you know, we didn't, now that we're in it, mm-hmm. things change. So early prognoses that Dr. Fauci and what he says is spot on, which is always, you know, there are models, and then you get the hard data, and then you throw that against the models, and the models change.
Yep.
So social distancing clearly is helping in the state and in Belfast, and but there's in the meantime, people aren't working. Unemployment was over 30,000 last week in the state of Maine, and that's going to be that's going to be a problem. That is a problem. Yep. They're talking depression. The depression mm-hmm. level unemployment short term. Yep. So, Jiminy Christmas, you know, we've got a lot going on. But the council is Zooming. You were on it until 10 or so.
We stayed with it till 10.
Yeah, we were there. We had three executive sessions. Then we came out of it. Didn't leave City Hall till 12:45 a.m. Wednesday morning. So we're looking at a situational meeting of 5 hours and 45 minutes, wow. which is too long. So we're working on that as a group, and we're going to jump to weekly meetings during this time instead of every 2 weeks because mm-hmm. so much changes on a weekly basis.
Uh-huh.
So this coming week, we're Zooming in with the school board because they apparently have their budget sort of worked out, and we're going to meet with them to hear what that's about and ask questions and get support. And then we're going to talk about Susan Dupler, the public health nurse, is going to be a big blood drive. I don't know. Do you give blood? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, some people do, some people don't, but in fact, critical time.
In fact, the vampires are always after me because I got O neg. I'm a universal donor, so I'm always getting the
So there's call. Going to be a big food drive, blood drive, I think, at the boathouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's there. And then we're going to talk about this economic package or whatever you want to call helping people keep the faith during this time. What's going on with the council.
The council meetings are going to be weekly now. And
yep.
All right, well, then we'll be broadcasting them starting at 7
yep.
on Tuesdays, right? And we're going to really start at 7.
Again, as I joked, broadband is definitely continues to gather momentum throughout the meeting. It took us about 45 minutes to start. Some of it was Zoom
mm-hmm.
in that we used different laptops, so that caused all kinds of stuff. Anyway, at City Hall is amazing. Mm-hmm. Let's leave it at that. So.
Yeah, I was sitting here throwing on one song after another. They'll be on soon.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate. But yeah.
And so the council is active, and we got that going. I was on a Governor Mills call Monday
mm-hmm.
With mayors, and I can tell you right now, she is focused on this. Some of these mayors would ask these questions, and she would politely shut them down, like great, great question. I think this might be my special caller.
All
Let's righty, take a
hang
call.
Hang on a second here. We push all the buttons and stuff. WBFY.
Hi, this is Dr. Heather Ward calling to talk with Eric Sanders.
Hey, Dr. Ward, it's Eric. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah.
There's and I've got a set of questions here that I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
But I wanted to thank you. This is the Heather Ward that I know, right?
It sure
okay.
is.
Okay. So how are the kids doing?
The kids are good.
Okay.
It's actually really nice to have everybody home. Nobody has a job. You know, they don't have work to go to, and so they have to be home. It's kind of fun.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Are you available to come over and watch my kids?
No.
the reason I ask is that's one of the questions on this thing that I'm going to ask you. But I have been getting feedback from the community. And I'm sure you probably know this, Dr. Ward, but everybody in the community cares a lot about Waldo County General Hospital and the people inside that are working there. So
yeah.
with all this going on, as you can imagine, if you didn't work there, we're all on the outside and we're trying not to look in. We're trying to be respectful, but we're crazy worried about you all. And so people were saying it would be awesome if we could just get you on the air to hear your voice. Talk to us a little bit about how it's going in there. Is the dynamic changed at all? I would imagine it has. Any sort of stuff. How is the emotional morale of the workers and doctors? And is everybody okay? Is it busy or slow? Because I've heard varying reports.
Yeah.
And et cetera. So that's why you're here, and I'm awaiting anything you can tell us.
Great. So the morale in the hospital, I'd say, is actually excellent. I've been so proud of everybody that I'm working with who have pulled together to do things that they don't normally do or work in an environment where they aren't usually stationed, and really come together around this issue. The hospital is really pretty calm right now. It's always amazing to go in there and experience it with not the usual hustle and bustle and everybody running in and out. Obviously, we're trying to protect our entire patient population, and we're doing that by limiting visitors and limiting outpatient kind of extra procedures being done or non-essential procedures from being done. And so it feels quiet. While we have this little bit of quiet, we are certainly spending a lot of time preparing for when it's not quiet. And I actually think that helps. It helps us a lot with, we really don't know what's coming. We see the same news reports that you see.
Okay.
We are preparing for worst case scenario, and by doing that preparation, I think it helps us feel more confident, all of us more confident.
Good. I think it's fair to say that our hospital, at least here in Belfast, has had that time to prepare as opposed to, say, a hospital in the Bronx or in New York City.
Yeah.
Because it is, the models seem to indicate to me it's going to be takes longer to get up here. Therefore, that does, we do have an advantage. One of the questions that people have, one of the big questions, do you guys have enough stuff? Does the hospital have, I think it's called PPE?
Yeah.
But can you walk us through, do you have an abundance of it? Do you, is there anything the community can help you? I know people are buying food for the hospital and stuff, but people really are caring right now, which is offset of this whole sort of bad thing is that the community is asking me to ask you, what can we do? So, but in terms of face masks and PPE, where is the hospital with that? Because everybody's watching the main CDC at 11:30 every day, and Dr. Shaw or Shay says, that four vans or seven vans are being delivered. Do we get some of that stuff? Do we need it?
Yeah, absolutely. So our hospital is fortunate, as you've already said. We have had time to prepare. We have adequate supplies at this time, and we have received our allotment from that stockpile. Also are prepared with PPE, so that's personal protective equipment, preservation policy. So, like, we're not going to go wasting this stuff, but we absolutely have enough to do what we need to do for a while. We're also working with other hospitals trying to establish ways to sterilize.
Okay.
Masks, for example, the N95s, those are the special masks that we need to wear when we're taking care of patients. So that will help preserve our supply as well. So right now we're really fortunate that, one, we haven't had a big surge of patients, and two, we have certainly had the benefit of being at the opposite side of the United States, and, you know, having Seattle before us, and just being given the time to prepare, and that's been a huge gift. But one thing I do want to say is that we see what the community is doing for us. We get calls every day about donations, and I would agree with you that this is a really amazing outcome of a horrible situation. Is seeing how generous and how kind the community has been. I get cards. I think it's really wonderful. Just saying, we see what you're doing. Thank you. And that's really been really nice to see.
Good.
The one thing I would say that the community can do, and I'm sure they're already doing, but is to look out for other people in the community as this goes on. People don't work for longer and longer. My fear is that it's not going to be COVID in the future. It's really going to be hunger and lack of you know, support for our general community. So,
well, that's the council decided they're going to they're doing $100 food vouchers for anybody that that needs it, and we're going to act on that Tuesday night and in quick form, because some of these government loans for people and small businesses will get here, but will they get here in time?
Right.
And food insecurity, I think, as I was talking to Vic about as we started the show, is something that in the best of times, Waldo County or Belfast silently has.
Yeah.
So I would agree with you. Do you have, I hope you have 5 or so minutes to answer these questions, but people have talked about, so what does a surge look like, Heather? Like, what does a surge look like at Belfast? And does the hospital have enough capacity for that or rooms? And then, I don't know if you can, but I've heard about the armory as a backup. And, like, what does a surge look like here in your all's eyes?
Yeah, so we are definitely making plans within the hospital to expand ICU level care capacity if we have to move to that, to expand the number of beds that we have available. We have also made changes to the ventilation of the hospital so that we have more negative pressure rooms, which help to suck the air out and help to keep COVID from entering into the common hospital spaces.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, so our maintenance team here at the hospital has been super busy trying to make these preparations. We have plans in place of using the OR and using the OR recovery areas and areas that typically don't hold patients but have the capacity to do that, you know, the right outlets and the right oxygen hookup and all of those sorts of things. So we have really worked hard to try to expand the capacity, so be able to take care of many more patients than we would normally be able to take care of with our normal beds and room setup. And as far as the armory goes, I have also heard talk of that, and boy, I hope we are able to continue with our social distancing and our trying to stop the spread before we get to that point,
okay,
because that will actually be the best thing that we can do,
yeah,
as a community. But yeah, so we've been preparing. We have preparations made for large numbers of people to come in. We also are, you know, looking at this as a system, and we will be transferring patients when we need to do that too. And luckily our entire system has room, it has capacity to take care of patients right now. We are nowhere near overwhelmed.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Have you been to Hannaford's lately?
I have been to Hannaford's. Yeah. Well,
so here's my synopsis. 2 weeks ago, Chase and I went and got ice cream on a Saturday night or something, and there were people, and this stuff was out there. And then yesterday I went, and it's a different world since the governor put down the shelter at home place. There's tape outside, there's security, everybody goes in and out the same way, and everybody I saw was wearing some form of mask.
Yeah.
But my question is, you know, grocery stores and I'm going to use Walgreens, but any drugstore are considered essential. But are they also hot spots for community spread? Have we talked to, I'm sure Hannaford's and all these guys and gals are doing everything 24 hours a 7, but like what does, the co-op is another place I went into recently, which was very stringent to get in, which was great. But is that enough?
Yeah, so I think they absolutely need to be commended for the changes that they've made in the number of people that they are allowing in at actually both places at a time in order to help improve the ability of each patient, of each person to remain 6 feet apart and with the social distancing. With that said, if you're picking up a can of beans and you have COVID and then you put that can of beans down and the next person who picks it up certainly could contract COVID in that situation. So we want people to be hand washing, and if you have any symptoms, not to go in those environments, and that will certainly decrease the chance of spread. But any of these places where we have people coming together in larger groups, it certainly could be a chance for COVID to be spread unknowingly. And that's why, you know, I think there are a lot of areas that are doing grocery pickup, and I certainly know there are some volunteer groups out there who will do some grocery shopping or grocery pickup and delivery for people who it's really dangerous to be in that environment and to take that risk.
That's right. The co-op, as a matter of fact, I don't know about Hannaford's, but the co-op, you can call them and somebody will take a cart and get the stuff that you want, and then I'm not sure how you pay for it, but they meet you out at the curb and you know, you never even touch the stuff. But that's a good point about if you're going to pick up something at the grocery store, take it. Don't put it back.
Don't put it back.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and just wash your hands, right? Like, we're super lucky that this virus has a fatty layer and is killed with soap and water. So we do good hand washing. It decreases our chance of putting our dirty hands in our mouths and contracting the virus that way.
I also think, because I have not washed my hands this much in my 60 years combined, as much as I have in the last month, I think that that's keeping me from getting general colds, too.
I think you're right. Absolutely.
I'm burned out.
Yeah, right.
I should be sick, but I'm not.
There's nothing left. There's nothing left on your skin. I just looked at some of the recent influenza data, and our influenza rates are very much lower the past 2 months, and I think it is all because of the hand washing and the social distancing that we're doing, and thank goodness for that, because it would be really awful to be dealing with the influenza outbreak and COVID at the same time.
Right. Question that I have, because I... you know me pretty well. I generally don't go to doctors because I don't want to know what's wrong with me, and I have poor health insurance. That's just the way I am. I have a primary care physician. If I got symptoms of, me personally, if I woke up with a fever, a cough, and something else, and I suddenly, and I said, oh boy, I think I would just go down to the hospital. And I don't think that's what I should do. Can you walk me through what I should do? Because I bet I'm not the only person that who thinks like that.
Right. So I'm so glad you brought this up. So the most important thing that you can do is not go to the hospital. Because what we want to do is be able to take care of the patients who really need to be seen with those symptoms. And then the patients who don't really need to be seen, they should stay at home. So the first thing you should do is call your primary care doctor. And if you do not have a primary care doctor, there you can call the hospital operator, or there is a physician line, which is a line that you can call to get access to a primary care doctor through Waldo County. And, of course, I don't know what that number is off the top of my head, but it would be available through the hospital.
Okay.
And if you call your primary care doctor and they feel like you need to be seen, they will actually call me or one of the providers working at the respiratory clinics. We have two clinics set up specifically to take care of patients who have symptoms of COVID and need to be seen and or tested. And we can do that. But we are asking that all of that goes through primary care first, because much of what can be done over the phone. But we have providers here 6 days a week and can expand that to 7 days a week as the need arises. And we can take care of anybody who is sick with respiratory symptoms. We just want that going through primary care first.
Makes sense.
I've got the number here for that primary care line.
It's
930-6766. And it's, you know, right on the hospital's website, 930-6766, if you need to find a primary care provider.
Cool.
Awesome. Thank you.
Dr. Ward, I got two more questions if you have the time. So I'm going to ask this one. This malaria drug, so the FDA has issued some emergency authorization for a malaria drug to be used to help fight it. How does that drug work, and does the hospital have access to this thing?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. It's important to remember that with this virus, it's a new virus, and everything we're learning right now, we're just learning on the fly. And that means that some people, either in China or Italy or France, have tried various things just to see if it's going to help.
Okay.
And so we have some information based on a very small number of patients regarding hydroxychloroquine, which is that malaria medication, that they were hoping it might be helpful. There is not a lot of good data out there about this yet. Hopefully it will be coming, but we cannot make any kind of judgment as to whether or not this is safe and effective based on the information that we have right now.
Okay.
They were certainly hopeful, and it was a great thought because it uses the same receptor that the COVID virus uses. They were hoping that they would be able to prevent that virus from entering the cells and making us sick.
Oh.
But when we look at the data right now, at least this initial data looks like it parallels a normal improvement in the viral load. But again, that's based on a really small study, two small studies, and one of those small studies actually shows there's a greater risk of harm, which would be heart arrhythmias or abnormal rhythms of the heart. So we want to be really careful in using experimental medications. And right now what we do know is that when people get super sick with this, it's called ARDS, and we have a ton of information of how to treat that.
Okay.
And so we want to use that reliable information and not kind of go to experimental meds right now.
Thank you. So my last question is really, it's coming up on Easter Sunday, so we're looking at about April 12th, I think, is Sunday. So the governor has said pretty much through this month, it's a shelter stay at home. As a dad of three active teenagers, it seems to have, I think those kids, it took them a while to understand, you know, they wanted to hang out with their, all these millennials have a pack mentality.
Yeah.
And I know they have a Snapchat and all of their virtual realities, group things, but they really like hanging out. Do you have any sense as a, and this may not just be a doctor question, but a Dr. Heather Ward, just a person question. Do you have any sense if President Trump is making remarks on today about trying to open some parts of the country back up in May, and we know that this is coming up here later and going to peak later than the rest of the country, when would you say that in your crystal ball, are we looking at, I'm saying through Memorial Day, we're going to be sheltering at home. That's my opinion. Do you have that same sort of sense as a community member that that would be wise, and or do we need to say July 4th, Labor Day? And I know it's a who knows question, but it does seem to peak and then fall off. If you look at Seattle, Wuhan, China is now reopened, although that seems dangerous because they just went through it. But is there a time frame that we're looking at here in the state of Maine and Belfast before, say, people can, even practicing social distance, maybe open their shops and or walk downtown and buy something? Or I don't want to say normal behavior, because I have a feeling that this is going to alter a lot of our behavior going forward for a generation or two.
But yeah.
How? I mean, what are you thinking?
Yeah. So we certainly haven't seen our peak.
No.
And I wouldn't expect that for 2 or 3 weeks, or hopefully we'll never really see our peak if we're doing a good job with our sheltering in place. And one of the worst things that we could do is do all of this really hard work of social distancing and isolation right now and pull that too soon, jumping into close social interactions. This will spike really quickly. So for me, it's hard to say when this is going to be over, but I don't anticipate it anytime soon.
Same.
And the best thing that we can do is think about this as a marathon. This is not a sprint. We are going to be doing this for weeks. And if we get careless or lazy or just sick and tired of it, and we start being slack and having that close interaction and contact, we will absolutely see a spike. And if we see a large spike, we will not be able to handle it. So the whole idea with social distancing is that we have fewer and fewer people getting sick at one time. And when we have a few people sick at one time, we can handle that.
Right.
When we have 1,000 people sick at one time, then it's very difficult to handle.
Gotcha. Okay. Vic, I think might have had a question.
Excuse me. I'm a vet, and my primary care is over in Togas. And we were given a card some years ago that, you know, if there's ever an emergency, you can go to any hospital and it'll get charged to the VA or whatever. So do you have any special considerations or advice or stuff like that for those of us whose primary care is an hour away, you know, at the Togas Hospital?
Yeah, so if you were to come down with symptoms and you wanted to talk with somebody about what you were experiencing, I would absolutely still encourage you to call your primary care.
Sure.
Being a family practice doctor myself, I love hearing from my patients when something's going on. However, if you really, let's just say you tried to reach them and for whatever reason you couldn't, you could call that Need a Physician line, and it's actually being answered by Population Health working in this respiratory clinic with me right now, and that need a physician line, that person answering that line would be able to talk to a provider here and help you either figure out what to do at home, or if you needed to be seen, or if you needed to be tested. And we have had people call on that line for help in just that situation where they didn't have access to their primary care, and we're happy to work through that with them.
Good. Thank you. And I had one other thing. You were saying that you want some people who are getting this, or if they get this and it's not that bad, to stay at home and sweat it out. And
I don't think she said sweat it out.
But well, but no, I actually mean that literally. One of the things I've heard is that if you're trying to fight through a virus, you shouldn't take fever reducers, because it's actually the fever that the heat that fights the virus that you should actually.
I've heard that too.
Yeah. So what about that?
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Well, you're a doctor.
I know. So what we usually recommend is certainly Tylenol or ibuprofen. Tylenol is, you know, the number one fever reliever. Acetaminophen is the generic name for it. I think it is fine to take that to help you be more comfortable. What we need you to be able to do is to be able to be comfortable enough to move around, to eat, to drink fluids, those basic things to help you, you know, hydrate and give yourself the nutrition that it needs in order to fight this virus.
That makes sense.
Okay.
You good with that? Sweat it out, but move around.
You can sweat it out if you want. Just drink enough liquid.
Sure. Yeah, and I mean, the advice that I was hearing was that if your fever gets really high, up to 103, 104, that kind of thing, then you do want to be taking things to knock it down, but that sweating through a fever actually makes it go by faster rather than knocking down the symptoms. But again, I obviously we don't want medical advice here on the air, but so.
Well, I think I've heard too that, and there's various, that this coronavirus or COVID-19 has the ability to, once it's in your system, sometimes you have a low fever, then it'll spike. People get better, then get worse. And so hydrating with a fever is, I think, Dr. Ward's advice. It's just overhydrate, because fevers, for those of us that know, fevers suck all the water right out of you. Is that right, Dr. Ward? Or
yeah, so we would definitely want you to hydrate appropriately so that you're still urinating and, you know, you need to be able to perform normal body functions that take fluids. Fevers do cause you to lose more liquid than you actually think you are, because you might be lying around instead of out doing exercise when you know you're going to need to hydrate more. So we definitely encourage hydration for a fever. And you're right, as far as symptoms coming and going a little bit with this, what we've seen, the very few numbers of COVID that we've seen here, we have definitely heard some people feel like it kind of comes and goes for a little bit. So it's super important that if a person is found to be positive or presumed positive, that they isolate themselves for the full 7 days from the onset of symptoms, plus 3 days of improved or resolved symptoms, and they are in those 3 days fever-free as well, to decrease that risk. Because if you have it one day, and then the next day you're like, oh, I feel great, and then you go out, you are very likely still contagious. So we want people home and isolating while they were sick and for a minimum of 7 days after the onset, for that very reason. It
Good
can
advice.
Feel like it comes and goes.
Good advice. Those are all the questions I had, Dr. Ward. I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to communicate to the public, or I just want to just tell you that, again, this was driven by community request, just to hear a voice from the hospital, because we do feel I think the world slowed down a little bit when this happened. So maybe the world was going too fast with all the cell phones and all the... But when people slow down, they start noticing things. And the community... I will say, as the mayor, I understand hospitals' regulated abilities to not communicate almost to the point of just the official memo or your CEO because of the nature of communications within the medical world and you know what I'm saying,
privacy.
Mm-hmm. So just to hear somebody tell us that things are okay and to hear that voice means a lot to us. So I just wanted to thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I really appreciate what you're doing for our community. And again, like, I cannot thank our community enough for the kindness and the generosity that they have shown towards us. And I just want to let them know really how much that means to us. We see it. We can't thank each of you personally, but it really is uplifting. And it keeps us going. It really does. So,
that's cool. So cool.
We live in a wonderful place, and this is a perfect example of why I'm here.
Yes, yeah, same here. And so thank you. I see you occasionally walking in the mornings.
Yeah.
So my regards to you and Matt, and keep the faith, and let us know if you need anything, or call me and let me know, and we'll make sure the city provides it, and let us hope together that social distancing will continue to work. I did have just a touch on a question about mental health, and I know you're primary, but I thought going into this, when Governor Mills said all of April we're going to shut everything down and everybody's going to stay at home. And I just presumed mental health might suffer for some people or later on suffer. And I didn't know if the hospital had thought about anything about, I don't want to use the word depression the wrong way, but if people get down or get the blues because they are isolated, is that something that the hospital has resources if people don't have that through their insurance, or how would that?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and we do actually expect to see that. We mostly are prepared through our primary care offices, and we do have social services counselors who can help with that. We also are working with, through Maine Behavioral Health, they are working on trying to establishing some telehealth visits, so that everybody can still be safe and protect themselves from COVID, but still be able to have the counseling that they need. That I believe is still under works. It's not set up quite yet, but we are trying to move to telehealth more and more to be able to meet some of those needs. But that's a very good point, and we certainly are concerned about the mental health of our patients in our community, because isolation can be really difficult to go through.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank you also.
Yeah.
I'm going to give out that number again. 930-6766 is the primary care and referral number at the hospital. And you're urged, listeners and citizens are urged to call that before coming immediately to the hospital, right?
Yeah, and call your primary care doctor.
Sure, if you don't have one, though, 930-6766.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
All right, Dr. Ward, thank you. All my love to you and your family. You take care,
thank
you so much. I'll see you on the other side.
Okay, best to your family.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye.
All right.
Well, there you go.
The word from the center of it.
Well, and so I feel better. I feel better. First of all,
visit.
I had a little teledoc there with Dr. Ward. But, so whether you're from away and moved here, or you grew up here and I think, you know, we're all in the same boat right now, and that boat isn't leaking. That's what I got out of that. The boat is in fine shape, but the seas could get rough. So that boat is being worked on. The hospital is being prepared, and so I was thrilled she called, and I thought she answered all my questions and your questions. And
yep,
there you go.
All right.
Now we know they are there, and they're okay. So that's all I had. I don't know what if any other questions you had, Vic. Or
okay. Well, I just cleared the phone line. We're going to hang out here in the studio a little longer, go back to regular programming at 4. The number here is 338-2277 if you've got a question for Mayor Eric Sanders.
I'm just reading a text here. We've got, let's see here. Looks like the CDC is having their meeting right now on public TV.
Right.
So don't have any official numbers to give to the public, but the one thing about COVID-19 that I was talking to Ned Leitner about yesterday was I could have it and not know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we're asking people to really social distance, really wash your hands, really be mindful of all that, because you never know where it's at, and you don't have the ability to change it or alter its course if you touch it or it touches you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think we've ever lived in a time, I'm going to go back to the 50s and the threat of nuclear war. With that sort of mental uncertainty that people had. You remember all the drills? We joked about that a couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
Fire drills and when you had to get under your desk at school. But
yeah.
This COVID-19 has the same sort of chilling effect on me mentally in that those perceived potential nuclear wars had. Like you just feel, you can't see it, you can't touch it, you can't smell it. You don't know who has it. And some of the best advice that I've gotten and continue to get from my spouse,
mm-hmm,
is act like you have it when you're dealing with others. In other words, act as though you have it means I wouldn't get very close to you. I would not touch anything that I wouldn't have to touch. And so I think we're learning a lot about ourselves in this process too.
Mm-hmm.
That we hadn't thought. You self-isolated for your whole life, you said. So maybe you can share.
that's a bit of a joke.
But, I know, I'm teasing.
But I'll be what I am, solitary man.
Oh, my God.
Da-da-da-da-da. Anyway.
I don't know.
Hey, so it's also important to keep up your spirits, call people, you know, call your mother wherever it is she is and things of that kind.
Aunts, uncles.
Yeah.
Grandparents.
Be in touch, and listen to some music. We're keeping it rolling out here at the radio station. Most of our radio people are now learning to program and run the studio from home. If anybody would like to participate in that, if they're sitting around bored at home, we're holding online seminars over Zoom to train people how to use the system and to run the radio station from home.
So I'll put in a request for the Belfast City Council on how to use Zoom.
Well, the next one is at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Okay.
So that's for DJ training for how to use the voice track system that allows us to run the radio station from home. Of course. But if any of you out there listening would like to fill that fantasy of being a DJ and keeping up your friends and neighbors' spirits with some music and chit-chat. That's what we can do here at the radio station.
Just for a moment of levity, I've got, mm-hmm, my 16-year-old at home.
Yeah.
My wife is down at her shop, and my 11-year-old, she's texting me, what time are we going out for deliveries? And I told her that, and then I just got a call, missed call, and then my 16-year-old has just texted me, "Do we have a screwdriver anywhere?"
All right.
The mind runs rampant, Vic.
Another educational opportunity. Thank you to the virus.
Oh, man.
All right.
So, all right. That's all I got for today.
Okay. So this program will be replayed tomorrow at noon. And thank you very much for tuning in. We're going to go back to the music.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye now.
This is Dal. I'm from Castine and from Newbern, North Carolina. You are listening to WBFY 100.9 FM in Belfast.
Hello, hello, it's Ellen Sander, host of Poetry Woodshed Radio. Not your ordinary poetry hour full of readings, recordings, spoken word, commentary, quirk, and quintessential poetry love. For the connoisseur and the merely curious, we have the classics, the contemporaries, the beats, the geeks, the jammers, and the slammers. So join us. Tune in Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. right here on WBFY Belfast 100.9 on your dial.
Destroy these.